I would like to thank Annie Ray, who did the lion's share of the work organizing the symposium, and thanks to you for being here. My name is Amy Burkhoff. I'm going to talk about cerambycid beetles associated with the Brazil nut family in disjunct tropical forests. And this should be considered a preliminary synthesis. And I've had a variety of different funding sources. First and foremost, I have to thank Gerald Tavakilian that discovered the interaction I've been working on, and also Drs. Monet and Morai, who have continued to assist with identification of the beetles and the plants. And I would never have been able to think about working with insects associated with large tropical trees had I not had the assistance of a sequence of really talented arborists. And I've also had a large number of people helping me in the field, in the lab, and these are a few of them. And I always have to thank my cast of thousands, the beetles. So I'm sure most of you are aware that in the early 1980s, Terry Irwin completed a series of canopy fogging experiments. And based on the tremendous abundance of insects that came raining down out of the canopy, he ended up proposing that there might be 30 million species, including undescribed species. And this was basically proposing that for every single described insect, there were another 29 still waiting in the wings. So that engendered a certain amount of controversy. And two of the assumptions that were particularly controversial were that the tropical forest canopy would be home to insects that had never been collected on the ground, and Irwin guessed that 20% of the Phytophagous beetles found on a particular tropical tree would depend upon that tree for their very survival. But at the time, there were almost no data available which could be used to evaluate those sorts of guesses. This is Gerard Tavakilian, who spent well over a decade in French Guiana elucidating host plant associations for neotropical cerambycids. And one of his many discoveries was that there was a group of beetles feeding exclusively on the Brazil nut family, or Lecithidaceae. So the Brazil nut is not simply the largest nut in the can of mixed party nuts. That's actually the seed of this very large rainforest tree, Bertholletia excelsa. And where this tree is abundant, people harvest the seeds, and that's a real economic mainstay throughout many areas of Amazonia. Now, when I started this project, I didn't really think that using host specificity to generate estimates of global species richness was likely to be very reliable, but I was very curious about some of the assumptions that he made. So my objectives were to determine whether different cerambycids were in fact associated with different tree species within this family, with branches cut during the dry or the rainy season, and with branches at ground or canopy stratum. So this map shows the distribution of New World members of the Brazil nut family. And my initial project, which was my PhD thesis work, took place in central French Guiana, where the Brazil nut family is represented by lots of species and is extremely abundant. A number of years later, I started a second project in southeastern Peru, where the plant family is represented by fewer species and fewer individuals. And this was to look at stability of host plant associations in disjunct regions of Amazonia. And hot off the press, I'm not going to talk too much about it, but we've just finished up a second project back at my original rearing site to look at stability of these associations over at least a short period of time. When we do these rearing experiments, we work with four or five individuals belonging to each tree species. And this is Pedro Centeno, one of my arborist collaborators, using a giant slingshot to set a lead line in one of these large trees. And then he uses single line climbing techniques to get up there and saw off a branch. I'm down at the ground with my pruning saw, ready to cut off a little thing that we call a canopy snack, and that gets suspended up in the canopy. And the remainder of each branch is left down on the ground. These branches are exposed to cerambycids in the forest for approximately 3 months, and adult beetles can visit them, and if they get lucky, meet a mate, and the females lay their eggs. And then we come along and collect sections of these branches and cage them up in these bags made out of no-see-um insect bedding, where it's very easy to collect the adults when they emerge. So, first project in French Guiana yielded 1,813 individual cerambycids belonging to 38 species, and the emergences peaked in 5 to 7 months. The Southeastern Peru project was totally out of control. We got over four times as many individuals, belonging to over twice as many species. The emergences just kept coming and coming and coming. And it turned into, you know, as you might imagine, an identification and sorting nightmare, which is why I don't have any really precise numbers tonight. But I can tell you some general trends. First, when I started to work on rearing insects, I thought that I was going to avoid some of the problems associated with mass sampling studies. I did not think I was going to end up pondering the mysteries of singletons, but I was in fact wrong, because the largest size class of beetle species are species that are represented by fewer than 10 individuals. And we can't really just think of them as tourists, because they are actually reproducing in those branches. And in a number of cases, we have species represented by one or two individuals that have been reared at both sites, both cerambycids and weevils. But they're not really the focus of what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to start at the other end of the bar chart with the one beetle species, our winner, that was represented in southeastern Peru by almost 4,000 individuals. So this is Palomae onceps, belonging to one of the less charismatic genera of cerambycids in the subfamily Lamiinae and the tribe Acanthocyanidae. This is currently placed in the genus Palomae, along with other small cryptic beetles that also emerge in great abundance from species of the Brazil nut family. But this genus is also hiding some mysteries. We have three things in French Guiana that are currently included within Palomae crossimana that are quite genetically distinct from each other, and one of them is actually most closely related to Palomae viticol from Ecuador and Peru. We also have three genetically distinct things embedded within Palomae mimetica, but I can't even tell those apart except for a little bit of size dimorphism, so I'm not going to show you repeated pictures of them. This is a quick and dirty tree built on some mitochondrial DNA, and I'm just showing it to point out that Palomae onceps, although it co-occurs with these other small cryptic beetles, does not seem to have a close relationship, resulting in a monophyletic genus. And basically, I've looked at mitochondrial DNA, nuclear DNA, male genitalia, female genitalia, and none of those argue for a close relationship. So there are mysteries to be seen in this very ubiquitous genus associated with the Brazil nut family. It's a life project. A couple of the other genera that I think are hardcore associates of the Brazil nut family, that ultimately I expect to find that all members of that genus are associated with the family, are Neoeutrypinus, Neobarycinus, and Xylergates. This table shows species that were represented by at least 100 individuals at either French Guiana or Peru site. And one of the things that I was curious about when I set up the second experiment is what's going to happen to beetles that are feeding on Lecithis in French Guiana, because that genus does not extend as far west as Peru. But they did, in fact, end up, most of them, on Eschweilera, although some of those species appeared to drop out. We now have some information on plant phylogeny. And it turns out that these beetles that I consider the hardcore specialists that we see over and over and over again that never emerge from alternate hosts are basically associated with a single derived clade within the Brazil nut family, and primarily the genera Bertholletia, Lecithis, and Eschweilera. We've sampled three genera outside of that clade, and we very seldom see the same beetles emerging from trees outside that clade. Gustavia, which is one of the two basal tree genera, is interesting in that it's, you know, morphologically very distinct from other species in the Brazil nut family. It has radially symmetric flowers. It has indehiscent fruits. It's an understory tree as opposed to a big canopy or emergent tree. And when we did the study in French Guiana, it just seemed to yield atypical cerambycids. There were a lot of species, but not very many individuals, not very much overlap with the other trees. But we actually have seen a lot of those same species or their relatives down in southeastern Peru. So now I'm actually curious as to whether these basal tree species host an independent cerambycid guild. We do get some cryptic acanthocyanines, but they're not the same. We get Neocidian from Gustavia, which we never see from members of the derived tree clade. We also have this radiation of unrelated beetles that all have these cool little antenna pooches, and you have no idea how exciting it is to see this until you've sorted your way through thousands and thousands of acanthocyanines. But that's really, this is big news for us. And we also have a radiation of species in Colobathia. So the cerambycids that are associated with Gustavia are more often diurnal. We get them more from canopy branches. And these species sometimes have host records from unrelated host plants. But they do appear to have a consistent association with Gustavia because we get them at two localities, and some of them we may not have very many individuals, but we got them in French Guiana in 95 and again in 2008. One of the things that may be circumscribing the beetle fauna on Gustavia is this tree's very bad smell. It's also known as stinkwood. And this is a series of malodorous compounds that have been identified from Lecithidaceae using headspace techniques where we collect volatile aromas from wood samples and analyze them with gas chromatography mass spec. And the dominant sulfur compound that we get in those analyses is dimethyl disulfide, and that is very abundant in Gustavia. In Peru, a lot of the cerambycids seem to have a broader range of host trees than we have in French Guiana. Most of the beetles in French Guiana had a single host. In Peru, we actually sampled two species of Eschweilera that appeared to have a lot of overlap in their beetle fauna, and they also appeared to have a lot of similarity to the beetles reared from Bertholletia, the Brazil nut tree. So maybe taxonomic similarity of the trees we sampled, it may have something to do with the fact that the trees are less abundant and less diverse there, so the beetles can't afford to be quite as picky. We have an interesting thing happen with seasonality in these localities. In these graphs, the host plants are across the bottom and emergences from dry and rainy season branches in the bars. In French Guiana, almost all of the beetles emerge from dry season branches, and this happened in the most recent experiment as well. We have a tremendous decrease in the number of beetles that come out from rainy season branches. While in Peru, we actually have an increase in both diversity and abundance during the rainy season. Well, my assumption is that there's probably going to be some difference in the climate. We have another clue that that rainy season in French Guiana represents hard times for the beetles. In the dry season, most of the beetles come out of ground level branches and a few from canopy stratum branches, and it's probably more or less proportionate to the amount of wood that was available because we had so much more branch on the ground than we had up in the canopy. But in the rainy season, we have that same disproportionate amount of wood on the ground, and almost all of the beetles emerge from canopy stratum. And we saw this again in our most recent experiment in French Guiana, but we do not see this seasonal change in stratum in Peru. So what's going on with the climate in French Guiana and Peru? They both have very similar annual mean rainfall, and they both have the dry season at around the same time of the year, and the rains start to kick in at around the same time. But the periodicity, I think, is going to turn out to be quite different. In Peru, we do our rainy season cut at the beginning of January, and by the time the adult beetles are emerging, the rain has really decreased to a very manageable level. While in French Guiana, we have the beginning of the rainy season, then we have a little petit été, a little mini dry season, and then we get the big rainy season right when the adults should be emerging. And my suspicion is that those branches just may be so super saturated that the beetles aren't really able to complete their life cycle, or they just wouldn't do very well in those very wet branches on ground level. So, do we get different species of cerambycids from different species of the Brazil nut family? In French Guiana, yes. Most cerambycids came from a single tree species. In southeastern Peru, We get the hardcore specialists colonizing beetles colonizing trees belonging to the derived clade. Are there different cerambycids associated with branches cut during the dry or the rainy season? In French Guiana, yes. Abundance and diversity were dramatically reduced during the rainy season, and there was a seasonal change in stratum. But in southeastern Peru, not really. Most species reproduce during both seasons, and emergences actually increased during the rainy season. And do we get different cerambycids associated with branches at ground and canopy stratum? In French Guiana, sometimes, but stratum generalists outnumbered specialists, and there was a seasonal change in stratum. And in southeastern Peru, the diurnal species emerged more frequently from canopy stratum branches and from trees not included in the derived clade. So this is from the project that we just wrapped up the field component of. This is one of my arborist colleagues, Alec Baxt, who did a truncated version of my thesis project, only we've added microclimate. So he had these little kestrel weather meters, both up in the canopy and at ground level, that were recording temperature, relative humidity, and wind speed. And so we hope to be able to relate changes in microclimate to changes in branch moisture and beetle colonization. And my next upcoming rearing project, I hope to have placed in Panama, which has more basal tree species that would enable us to look more closely at the possibility that we have a second guild associated with the basal trees. And there's a longer dry season, so I expect that that will turn out to be the stressful period for cerambycids in this location. And my long-term idea is to try and get a couple of more projects seated around the perimeter of Amazonia and then deal with Brazil permits and come into the bulk of Amazonia and set up a few projects, because I think that if we can get data on these beetles, genetic data on these beetles from all these areas, eventually it's going to be possible to reconstruct this ancient history of migrations that may have resulted in these weird genetic anomalies that I'm finding in beetles within French Guiana. I forgot to turn on the timer, so I don't know where I am, but okay. Okay. Thank you.